You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
One person's garbage is another person's treasure. Stories from the field.
This is episode 260 for the 17th of September, 2017.
I'm Chris Webster, and you're listening to Arc 365, a podcast a day, every day for 2017. This is Stories from the Field, where I just relate to you some story from my fieldwork experience. I've done a few of these. If you just type stories into the search bar at arcpodnet.com/arc365 over on the right, then you'll see some other stories from the field. Those were mostly based on blog posts that I had written over at Random Acts of Science. This is just going to be sort of an off-the-cuff discussion because I get asked this literally all the time. Anytime you tell somebody an archaeologist, they always ask, what's the best thing you've found? Or what's the coolest thing you've found? There's variations. But basically, they want to know, what kind of treasure have you found? But first off, I am very vocal about saying archaeology is not about artifacts, okay? Archaeology is about telling stories. And the artifacts that we find or don't find in some cases, and the features that we find, and the way we do our analysis is also we can tell a story. They're just components. It's like if you read a book, somebody wouldn't say, oh, what was the best verb in that book? Nobody would say that. Well, some people might, and it's probably Grammar Girl, but some people would say that, but not really. So they would say, what was that story about? Or what was the book about? Okay. When I go to a site, somebody who doesn't know any, is not a professional archaeologist, they might say, oh, you were at that site. What's the best thing you found? No. What they should say is, what did that site tell you about the history of the area or about the people that created it? That's the story. Okay. That being said, and the reason I want to say that is, to archaeologists, the best thing that we found is not necessarily the shiniest thing or the fanciest thing or whatever. It's really based on the context. Like, where are you working and what are you doing? Because I could not tell you the best thing I've found in any one place across the country. I've worked in pretty much almost every region of the country, except for, like Alaska and Hawaii. And really like the swamps of Louisiana, but I've been just about everywhere else. And I've worked in all these different environments. And in each one of those circumstances, you find different things that at the time are really significant for what you're doing. Like for example, I've got an example just from a couple of years ago. I talk frequently about this place I worked down in the East Central Mojave Desert in California a couple of years ago. And one time we found this tin can. Yes, a tin can out in the middle of nowhere where really we weren't finding a whole lot of anything. And we found this one can and it had this type of seam along the side. It was, I want to say it was a lap seam and it was, which means the metal was just laid over each other. And I'm trying to remember what the top actually looked like. I took a picture of it because this was so significant. We all stood and geeked out over this can because none of us had ever seen a can like this before. And to us at the time, that was a really cool thing. Now, the can was probably only about 70, 80 years old and maybe a little older, but either way, less than 100. But to us, partly because there wasn't anything else out there in that particular area, but also because of the uniqueness of the can, it really told us something about the type of, I guess maybe the type of person or the type of people or the type of activity that would have brought that type of can to that area. And that was a really cool find. Other things can be cool because of their, I guess, because of their rareness, but they also tell a story. And one of those is a common one, and that's like a fluted point, like a Clovis point or something like that. I remember finding a fraction of a Clovis point one time. And really the cool thing about that is because they are relatively rare, and we always talk about them because Clovis used to be the oldest thing in this country. That used to be like the thing you would find that'd be the oldest thing, but now there's pre-Clovis. But Clovis is still sort of that, that I don't know, white elephant, or I don't know if I'm using that right, but that rare thing that you could find. And I did find, like I said, a portion of one of those one time. I honestly didn't freak out that much over it. It was kind of cool. I took a picture of it, of course, and we recorded it. We collected it. One of the few types of points that we actually collect. And I guess it was cool just for the fact that we could say this is one more place where this kind of technology was used. Because it is a relatively rare lithic technology, we can say this is one more spot on the map that we can add that says, here's another one. Let's start adding to this picture. Because I don't think we're quite done telling that story. There's a lot of researchers still working on various components of the Clovis story. And it's by far not done yet. So And some of the other things, like out here in Nevada, we find a lot of mining stuff. So sometimes there's that one like really complete, unique bottle or something like that that has a lot of information on it that can tell us a lot more about an area. I love finding like Ghirardelli chocolate tins and I guess some other like fancier ceramics and glass and things like that, because often, not all the time, of course, but often that can tell you about the success of a mine. Obviously the size of the mine and the outbuildings and things like that can tell you how profitable it was, because if they start doing a lot of construction, then they were probably pulling a lot of minerals out of the ground that were making them some money. So they're bringing in more people, they're upgrading the buildings. But also the quality of life of the people increases when you start seeing fancier foods and things like that out there, and fancier dishes and stuff like that. You can say, well, you know, they can now afford these things, or some they brought them in, they can afford to bring people in that already had these things. You know, some people are a little wealthier maybe. So that's a really fun component of that story that you can tell. So I guess the moral of the story is, don't ask an archaeologist what's the best thing they've ever found. Ask them what's the most significant portion of a story they've ever contributed to. I'm not really sure how to phrase this. If other archaeologists are listening, chime in and leave me an email at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com or comment on this episode, archpodnet.com/arc365/260 for this episode. And tell me how you would prefer we get asked that question. And also, we don't do dinosaurs, obviously. But how should the public, the general public, ask us that question? How do we phrase that to say, what's the, you know, because we can't say, what's the best story we've ever told? That's weird. But what's the, you know, honestly, I don't know. I don't know how to phrase it. I really don't. All I know is, ask us about stories, ask us about context, don't ask us about artifacts. Because we'll get really annoyed about that. Because what's cool to us is not cool to other people, first off. And what's cool to us, like I said, adds to the bigger picture. So that's all I've got for now. If you'd like to help keep ARC 365 going into 2018 by writing some content, that's all you got to do. I mean, these are really simple. They can be 500 words. It takes 20 minutes, 30 minutes maybe to go over it. Honestly, I usually start from like a Wikipedia entry and I check the sources. If there are not very many references, then I won't use it. But if there's a ton of references, I'll go to those references and then verify some of the information in there and I'll go from there. But it really doesn't take very long. And this is intended to be a general overview to deliver to this audience things they may not read about or listen about or even think about on their own. So it's not a in-depth research project. It's not a scholarly article or anything like that. It's really just, hey, this thing exists. Here's some cool facts about it. Let's move on to the next one. Okay. That's all I'm really going for there. So they're actually really simple to write. You don't need to know anything about archaeology. You can do the research yourself. This is a public outreach program, and that's all we're trying to do is give information to the public. So, all right. Well, thanks a lot for listening to this, and listen to our back catalog at archpodnet.com/arc365, and you can go to the past 30 page. Just click up in the menu items there, and you can see the last 30 episodes of any podcast, because that's the limit that this website host will let me display at any one time. But you can use the search field and search anything you want. So you can, if you want to see episode 5, you can just type in episode 5. So anyway, thanks a lot, and let's keep this going into 2018 if we can, and we'll be back tomorrow with more great content. Thank you.
That's it for this episode of ARC 365. Please share this episode on your social media sites so others can have fun and learn about archaeology too. Please consider a donation to ARC 365 by sponsoring an episode for just $35. You can find the sponsor page at www.archaeologypodcastnetwork.com/sponsor-ARC365. Thanks and have a great 2017 with the Archaeology Podcast Network. The song Storm Diggin' was written, performed, and recorded by Steve Webster. This show is produced by Chris Webster and Tristan Boyle and was edited by Chris Webster.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.